sit down as long as you can and think of as many aspects of the answer to the question, why am I sitting here doing this exercise? Well, I'm sitting here doing this exercise because I read about it in a book by Aleister Crowley, and he heard about it from a Buddhist monk in Ceylon. But why did I read a book by Aleister Crowley? Well, because Alan Watts recommended a biography of Crowley. And you go on adding reasons, and after a while you come up with things like, I'm sitting here doing this exercise because the Scandinavians overfished the North Sea in the 5th century, and they couldn't make their living as fishermen anymore, so they turned to piracy. And that's why my grandmother's name was O'Loughlin, which means son of the Dane in Gaelic. And then, of course, you ultimately come to, because the sun is the kind of star that has planets, and this is the one planet that we know of in the solar system that can support this kind of life. If you try that exercise, you should do it at least 3 times in a month to find out the infinite number of factors and coincidences and synchronicities and accidents and utterly inexplicable connections you can find that explain why you're sitting here doing that exercise. But one day I discovered I was sitting there doing that exercise because I had polio when I was 40 years old, which I think made me look less athletic than most boys, and therefore more bookish, which led me in more and more from fiction to nonfiction, from nonfiction to science and philosophy, etc., until I developed an enormous curiosity about all the questions that everybody thinks they have the answer to, and all the philosophers and scientists are still arguing about. And so, of course, the riddle of consciousness is one of the central ones, a major turning point was Krzyzewski's Science Insanity, which persuaded me that we can't make meaningful statements about one reality. All we can do is talk about comparative realities as perceived by different instruments, which includes the instrument that reads all the instruments, which is the human nervous system. Not the brain, the whole nervous system. Every evaluation is an evaluation of the organism as a whole, because the nervous system interlocks with the immunological system, the endocrine system, the neuromuscular system, and so on. So that every evaluation you make is an evaluation of your whole body, and separating it into mind and body is a fictitious dichotomy, it's a synergetic process. And after years of teaching this in various ways, just a couple of months ago, I came up with a new way of teaching it, which is the following. Remind yourself that you know the difference between a movie and real life, and you can keep the two quite distinct in your head, and you can control yourself with that knowledge. And remember the role of the editors, the camera people, and so on, as well as the actors. Then go see one of these really gory slasher movies that are so popular these days. See if you can keep it, you remember all through it, this is only a movie. See if the director doesn't make you jump or cringe at least once, or grab the chair or something like that, or do some kind of physical reaction. That shows how reactions of the organism as a whole, and what the front brain knows does not control you at all. It just thinks it does. So if all reactions are reactions of the organism as a whole, and evaluations of the organism as a whole, well, then you start thinking about things like cultural relativism and neurological relativism and so on. And I suppose the major next step in my explorations in this area was reading Robert D. Ropp's Drugs in the Mind sometime in the late 1950s. I've always, all my life, read a lot of books on psychology. It's one of the several topics I try to keep up to date on. And Robert D. Ropp's a completely new approach attributing mental illness. And that was only the first half of the book, though. I read that with great interest and a feeling that he was probably right. I still think more of what's called mental illness is neurochemical accidents rather than psychological problems, per se. And a lot of it more and more looks to be genetic, too. But the second part of the book was about chemicals that change the nervous system in a way that creates mystical and religious experience. And I thought, gee, I'd like to try one of them because I've never had a mystical or religious experience. It might be interesting to have one and see if I retain my skepticism afterwards. A rather risky proposition, but I was young and ballsy and had more adventure than brains in me. And so eventually I got a hold of some peyote and I had a mystical experience. I've had a lot of experiences which have changed my idea of reality profoundly. The idea of reality as a singular noun doesn't make any sense to me at all anymore. I like the sociological term class and grid, which some sociologists use. Kozinski called it your system of abstractions, which means a lot if you know the mathematical school he was working from, but doesn't mean much to most readers. Leary coined the magnificent term reality tunnel. I call it a neurological reality tunnel. Everybody has their own neurological reality tunnel, which is why we misunderstand one another so often and why we misjudge one another so profoundly.